And remember, Katrina, you must call me Doctor.
Have you ever thought what it's like
to be wanderers in the fourth dimension? To be exiles?
This is the Doctor speaking. Well, one of them. Is there anybody there?
I hate computers and refuse to be bullied by them.
And their leader was called?
The Doctor.
Are you trying to tell us that you are the Doctor?
That's right. I've reversed the polarity of the neutron flow so the TARDIS should be free of the force field.
You may be a Doctor, but I'm the Doctor. The definite article, you might say. Would you like a jelly baby?
I'm a Time Lord.
I'm the Doctor. Or will be if this regeneration works out. And it seems not a moment too soon.
How do you do? I'm the Doctor.
I am the Doctor!
I'm the Doctor, by the way. What's your name?
Rose.
Nice to meet you, Rose. Run for your life!
Fantastic.
Yeah, I'm the Doctor.
I'm Aldi.
Hello, I'm the Doctor.
Both eyes are cool.
It's a fez. I wear a fez now. Fezzes are cool.
Silence will fall.
Dillygaff, everyone, welcome to the TARDIS Blend. Well, here we are. It's the week of Geek, countdown to Doctor Who. And I'm Greg Davies, also known as CGT2099. And I'm here with
Tom Cheridor.
How you doing, Tom?
Doing pretty great, man.
Good. And we have a special guest this week. It's the man, the myth, the legend himself, Andrew Sorsini, also known as Mr. Baby Man, co-host of The Drill Down, among all the other projects he gets up to online. How you doing, Andy?
I'm doing great. I'm very happy to be here. I can't wait to get into talking about Doctor Who and like you said earlier, geeking out about it.
Well, I was going to say, dude, like you and I have talked about Doctor Who a little bit here and there on another podcast we do, The Roundup.
Yeah.
And so why don't you give the listeners a little bit of background about yourself in terms of like, you know, when you became a Doctor Who fan and what you're digging about the current Doctor and all that stuff.
Well, if we have to go back to when I became a Doctor Who fan, we'd have to go back to all the way back to Tom Baker, back in the day.
That's so, all right. He's my Doctor, too.
I was a fourth Doctor Doctor Who fan. I grew up with watching him on PBS and watching all the cheesy sets. And, you know, at the time, even as a kid, I kind of got the sense that those sets were cheeseball, and maybe even a couple of notches below Star Trek, the original series, which they themselves had their own kind of cheesy production values. But, you know, that was part of the charm. That was part of the charm of the show.
I agree. Let me add just there as well is it the way that the settings and the set dressings and the effects were done in those days is a real testament to the crew at the time, because the BBC weren't giving them a lot of money, and their attitude was, we can, you know, give up and not do the story, or we can do our best to make sure the story comes out there. And you know, they did their best with what they had at the time.
And that's really what stands out about Doctor Who in my memory is how tantalizing the stories were and how engaging they were. And so, you know, that for me it was the Tom Baker Doctor Who, and then I had a long kind of gulf of even forgetting that Doctor Who existed until about the Christopher Eccleston Doctor Who, and then it was like, hey, Doctor Who again, wow, I remember that. And so I started watching that, and that naturally folded into the 10th and the 11th Doctors, which, you know, now I'm an avid fan. It feels like I never stop being a fan watching them.
I think that's the key thing about Doctor Who is, like, no matter when you leave it, if you leave it,
yeah,
you can always come back to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's just this timeless quality about the coolness of the show that just,
you know, you can go part is, Oh, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
The best part is this is the best part, and maybe I don't know if you've experienced it, but having a kid and having that kid now get into Doctor Who. Now, like, my daughter is like an avid Doctor Who fan herself, and she loves her Doctor Who is the Matt Smith Doctor Who. Mm-hmm. So she's got, you know, she's got her own 11th Doctor sonic screwdriver and her little toy TARDIS. And she's like a real big fan herself. So it's a lot of fun watching Doctor Who with her.
Tom and I both own the sonic screwdriver as well. I mean, what does that say about us? He's got two of them. What does that say about us? Well, this week is the big week, Tom. We've got the launch of the new season beginning on Saturday in the UK, premiering on BBC.
Super Saturday, Greg.
Yes, indeed. And here in the United States on BBC America. And, boy, the last couple of weeks have just been absolute hype town for BBC and BBC America. I mean, it's been almost like, almost as if every day there's been like a new clip or a new video or a new trailer or a new behind-the-scenes interview or something coming out from BBC to promote the show. And I cannot remember a time when anticipation among Doctor Who fans has been at such a high. It's just even before, you know, Matt Smith's debut season, that doesn't even compare to the anticipation, I think, that a lot of fans have for this season now.
Mm-hmm.
Which is very different for Doctor Who. It's you know, just absolutely amazing as far as I'm concerned.
Thanks.
Welcome.
This is it, yeah? That place?
Nowhere. Middle of. Yeah, this is it.
Howdy.
Doctor.
It's that
pond! You know what it feels like? Is it feels like those old episodes, but with a budget.
Well, yeah. You know, it's almost as if I think Moffat kind of may have done a bit of a deal with the BBC and said, you know what, let's distort the budget a bit. You know, let us have a little bit more money next season, meaning Series 6, for, you know, the special effects and the visual nature of the show and stuff like that, and we'll make do with what we can for Series 5. You know, it kind of feels like that because...
well, that, and they've already opened themselves up to a brand new audience that, you know, that they can actually run commercial spots on. So I'm sure that has a little bit to do with it, you know?
Yeah, you know, the web promotions as well have just been absolutely spectacular and, you know, all kinds of stuff coming out. But let's take a look at the upcoming episode. We'll do a little bit of a preview here. The opening episode is called The Impossible Astronaut. It's a... first part of a two-part adventure concluding in the episode 2 called Day of the Moon. And the opening of the episode sees the Doctor reunited with his companions Amy Pond and Rory Williams and the mysterious River Song as they go up against a new villain or a new set of villains in this particular episode known as the Silence. That's silent with a TS on the end. Which kind of keys into the whole Silence Will Fall meme that was going through the last season.
Oh, yeah.
And it keys into what was going on with the Pandorica and the cracks in time and stuff like that. So Moffat's continuing the overarching story arc, and he is, you know, he's kicking it off a little bit differently because for some reason at the beginning of this episode we have – everyone separated and they're reuniting. They're getting back together. They've been summoned to meet each other in the United States. So the question is, what's happened there? Like the last time we saw Doctor Who, they were all together. And at the beginning of this episode, it must be set further in the future or something along their timeline because they're catching back up again. What do you think about that?
I tell you, one of the things that I'm looking forward to the most about this upcoming season is not just, first of all, not just this part of it being set in America, which is very exciting to me because, I mean, it's a tacit acknowledgement of the huge fan base that Doctor Who has in America now, which I don't think you can say about Doctor Who. You couldn't say that about Doctor Who since the Tom Baker days.
I agree.
But the other thing is I want to find out about the continuing what the continuing relationship with the Doctor and River Song. Like, I want to know, what is the deal with that, and what, you know, what is she going to reveal to him, and what has been their past? I mean, that to me it's fascinating me, and I really want to find out what's behind that.
I love the way Moffat's approached that too. He starts off like her last meeting with the Doctor before her death is his first meeting with her, back a few seasons ago when David Tennant was still the Doctor, and they keep meeting in different orders and everything's just all up in the air and it's all wibbly wobbly timey wimey stuff. And I love the way he does the whole. He really has a gift in being able to tell a story so well with the with all the time loops and the confusing time travel stuff that he's incorporated into it. He has said that this season we do find out who River Song is,
mm-hmm.
and what her relationship to.
But it's just a guess.
Well, what's your guess?
That was his ex-wife. Didn't she say as much last season?
There's been a bit of acknowledgement that she could be,
or maybe she's
the wife or the ex-wife of the
his
Doctor.
Future wife yet to come.
Right. Yeah. So it's hard to say really, because that would imply that she's not human, that she's a Time Lord,
mm-hmm.
in some ways.
Hello, Pons, come here.
So someone's been a busy boy then, eh?
Did you see me?
Of course.
A stalker.
Flirt.
Husband.
And Rory the Roman. Oh, come here.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh. Hey, nice hat.
I wear a Stetson now. Stetsons are cool.
Hello, sweetie.
The other thing that's been floating around as well is Stephen Moffat's been saying that secrets are finally going to be revealed about Amy Pond this season. And that's made a lot of fans sit back and go, huh, what kind of secrets could she be? What's going on with that? And, you know, the only thing I can say to that is don't forget, there's still some weirdness and questions about Amy Pond from the previous season. Like, if you remember, when the cracks in time consumed something, they disappeared from existence and everybody forgot about them. And if you go back and watch that first episode from that season, like, she says, well, I don't have a mum and dad, and we later find out it's because they've been consumed by the crack in time.
Oh.
She wouldn't have memory of her parents, but she remembers that her mother did faces on apples and she gives one to the Doctor. So how can she remember that stuff? Hmm. So, you know, there's all kinds of stuff. And I think Moffat's just been – he's been uber planning his several seasons in terms of where – things are going to be going and everything. I think this is just really the beginning. I think we're going to end up with more questions than answers this season.
I don't want to throw another curveball in there, but let's see. Amy Pond has red hair, and River Song has red hair, and River Song might be the Doctor's future wife.
She's more of a blondie though, isn't she, River Song?
Yeah, she doesn't have red hair.
Yeah, she's more of a blondie, I thought. But if she's a Time Lord, it would stand to reason that she could regenerate like Romana. Maybe A.B. Pond is River. Or maybe Romana is River Song.
Yeah, I hope it's Romana.
But then again,
if it's going to be somebody from his past.
But then again, there's that episode that Neil Gaiman is doing this season, which is the Doctor's Wife. And there's a lot of people saying that the character Idris in the Doctor's Wife is the Doctor's wife. And if that's the case, is that like another marriage he's had, or is that River Song,
or is it Romana? Marilyn Monroe?
Yeah, what the hell, dude? So, you know, Gaiman and Moffat have really thrown a lot of curveballs at fans this season. And, you know, the interesting thing, guys, is, you know, when it comes up to a season like this, I tend to find myself jumping into all the forums because, you know, I'm a spoiler hound and I want to try and find out what's going on and speculate and try and work out the jigsaw puzzle, so to speak. And I think this is the first time I've ever been so close to the run-up of a launch of a season or a movie or anything where there are still more confusing questions and confusion than what there has been confirmation about what's been spoiled or speculated about or whatnot. There's still a lot of questions about this. So whoever's like keeping the stuff under wraps for the BBC is doing a damn good job, I've got to admit.
Hmm.
So.
Yeah. In looking further ahead to later on this year, I'm also looking forward to Torchwood. as you know, I've been a huge Torchwood fan since the series started. And that's another thing that we've got to look forward to down the line. And,
absolutely. Yeah, July is when it kicks off. Yeah. And that'll be around the time when the new Doctor Who season breaks. It's split in two this year. So we've got the first half of Series 6, then Torchwood, then the second half of Series 6. And then for the hardcore Doctor Who fans that follow everything, we've got the Sarah Jane Adventures after that. So it's a big year for... big year for Doctor Who, but Torchwood is definitely something that's I'm really looking forward to, because they're getting a lot of American promotion behind that, and the subtext, the subtitle I should say, of the season is called Miracle Day. 10 episodes featuring Captain Jack Harkness, Mr. John Barrowman, and Eve Miles reprising their roles in as the part of the Torchwood team, and we've also got Esther Drummond and Mekhi Pfeiffer as well joining the team, and the adventure is supposed to span across from Cardiff, Wales, and London, UK, all across to Canada and the United States.
And Bill Pullman.
Yeah, that's right. He's in there too. He's gone from being the United States president in Independence Day to some child molester that's supposed to be on death row or something like that. So it's supposed to be pretty creepy.
All right. Well, I'm definitely looking forward to that.
Do you guys know the premise of the new season at all?
My wife, who is just as big of a fan as I am, clued me in a little bit. It's titled Miracle Day, so she explained that the miracle there is that there is a day where no one dies, and everyone is like, "Oh, it's a miracle! It's amazing! No one has died," and then the next day comes around, and no one has still died. And then we start to get into, now we're getting in trouble.
Just a perfect day. Drink sangria in the park.
And then at 10:36 p.m., the last death on the planet Earth was recorded.
Oh, it's such a perfect day. I'm glad I spent it with.
It's like it's basically the same premise as that classic story Death Takes a Holiday, where death literally takes a holiday and no one on Earth dies, and the Death Takes a Holiday was also that was also the basis for Meet Joe Black as well, same story. So it's basically like, what do we do when no one dies on Earth? What do we as a society do in that case?
Poses some interesting questions for the character of Jack Harkness too, because he can't die. And
right.
So maybe this is why he returns to Earth, to try and maybe his if they find an answer to, you know, reestablishing death on Earth, that he may actually ultimately find an end for himself, or a cure for himself. So I don't know.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it.
But that's coming up in July, and that time's going to fly, dude, between here and there. So it's going to be a lot of fun when that does come out later in the year. This week on geeksofdoom.com, we're going to have we're doing a Doctor Who theme this week. It's a week of geek, and we're doing the countdown to Doctor Who. There's all kinds of articles going to be going up, and one of the articles that's it's not up at the time of recording, but it will be up this week, is a post that I've put together, a feature of 10 Doctor Who, classic Doctor Who episodes that new fans, you know, if you're curious about the classic era, you know, that you probably want to check out. And so I know what ones I've chosen, because they're going to be in the article. But what about you guys? If you had a fan that came up to you and said, you know what, I want to check out some of the classic Doctor Who stuff. What episodes, what things do you think I should check out?
You know, I would say right off the bat, just because it's kind of newsworthy, I would definitely recommend that they check out Netflix if they are an instant subscriber or a Netflix watch instantly, because they just put the first four seasons back on, and I've got an inkling of suspicion that they're going to add season 5 the day that season 6 premieres. So,
and they've got a whole bunch of classic Doctor Who as well.
they've got tons of stuff. That's actually where I got to watch a lot of the stuff. I think it was the Ark.
Oh, the Ark in Space?
Ark in Space, wonderful. Any of the Tom Baker stuff is really good.
I love that line that he says in the Ark of Space when he's talking about the human race, and he's like, "This indomitable. They're indomitable." And, yeah. and they've always come back to that line that he says in that episode in the current series too. It's a brilliant, brilliant show, The Ark in Space. Andy, what about you, mate? Is there any memorable episodes from the classic era that you'd recommend new fans check out?
Well, I mean, in general, I mean, I would definitely want to go back and visit all of the Tom Baker ones just for nostalgia purposes. But if I were to recommend someone who is unfamiliar with Doctor Who to start their watching, like, I would sit them down and make them watch Blink, because, like, if you really want to get somebody hooked into it, like, right off the bat, that to me is like that's one of the big clinchers, where you're watching it and afterwards you're like, I don't care what this show is, it's awesome. Where give yeah. me more.
Yeah, who was Sally Sparrow in that? What was the name of the actress that played that? Carrie Mulligan, that's the one.
Carrie Mulligan.
She was brilliant.
Rated actress. Yes, she was really, I think it was, BBC was really fortunate to get her for that episode, because she was definitely, that was right on the cusp of her completely breaking out, because right after that she did An Education and Never Let Me Go, which, you know, both movies were breakout roles for her.
It's up to you now.
What am I supposed to do?
The blue box, it's my time machine. There is a world of time energy in there they could feast on forever, but the damage they could do could switch off the sun. You have got to send it back to me.
How?
And that's it, I'm afraid. There's no more from you on the transcript. That's the last I've got. I don't know what stopped you talking, but I can guess. They're coming. The angels are coming for you. But listen, your life could depend on this. Don't blink. Don't even blink. Blink and you're dead. They are fast, faster than you could believe. Don't turn your back. Don't look away. And don't blink.
Well, she was born in the UK, wasn't she?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, most people that are actors that have been born in the UK who've had the chance to be in Doctor Who said, oh, in a minute they'd do it. Like, what's his name? Shepard, from the panel that you were at, Tom. Was it Mark Shepard?
Yeah.
Yeah, oh, you know, he's...
Who always plays bad guys.
Right? That's debatable. He's been in a few different roles, and but the one that he's doing in Doctor Who, I believe he's a hero. He's in the first two episodes, and he can do anything he wants at this point. He's been taking on all kinds of roles in different television series, and he's been in a couple of movies and stuff. But as soon as they contacted him about Doctor Who, he dropped everything and went to it.
I was going to add a couple more.
Yep.
Just because I pulled them up on my Netflix queue, so I know they're on here. Androids of Terra, which is Tom Baker, made in 1978, but very good. Let's see. And the other one was the Leisure Hive, which has Romana in it.
That's an interesting one. That's when they changed over they had a new showrunner for that one. It was a complete change in style.
Yeah, it was
pretty good.
It was kind of strange, but I did like it. And I don't know. It was it kind of gives you some good wit on why people liked Tom Baker as their favorite doctor. Some of them because he was there for so long, but
7 years.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So many other doctors since then have kind of picked and choosed portions of the older doctors, and I think a lot of Matt Smith can be seen. You know, at times the Tom Baker pops up.
I'm not sure about. I mean, you know, I can see that in the last series, but when they did the Christmas special, that's just gone. That was all Matt, dude. I couldn't.
Oh, yeah.
I totally couldn't pick out any, you know, anything that reminded me of like John Pertwee or Patrick Troughton or Tom Baker or anyone. I mean, that was totally
he definitely
Matt.
Found his own.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think that's part of the reason I'm really looking forward to this. Actually, incidentally, there's an episode coming up in this season where Stephen Moffat says that the premise behind it is, what would happen if you made the Doctor really angry? And like we've seen the Doctor angry before, but apparently we haven't seen him as angry as what he'll be in this particular episode. So it might be a bit of a darker side of the Doctor, perhaps.
You think that's an American influence?
No, I don't think so. I think it's just another opportunity to push the boundaries of the character's personality a bit. They've always jumped between the two. Two spectrums, yeah. You know, and you know they did that with Tom Baker, and they did that with Patrick Troughton, and
Greg. It's purely the Stetson, and it gets shot off his head, and as we can see in the previews, and that pisses him off. It pissed me off too.
don't shoot off a man's Stetson.
You know, and I've got a T-shirt from that panel I saw at WonderCon. It's just the Doctor, and he's got the Stetson on, and he's leaning up against like an old school Cadillac. Or Chevy, probably Chevy, I don't know. And yeah, I mean, that would piss me off.
He looks so goofy with that hat on, dude. Honestly, it looks great.
My favorite parts is like, you know, whenever he put the fez on, he's like, I wear fez now, fezes are cool. And they're like, take that ridiculous thing off.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we're going to see more of that.
I'm sure this lasts for like half an episode anyway.
Not even that. I can tell you that much. I don't want to spoil it for our listeners because I kind of know what pans out in the first episode. So, let's just say that, the first part of episode one might be a bit of a shock for some people. So we'll leave it at that.
What? A mysterious summons? You think I'm just going to go? Who sent those messages? I know you know. I can see it in your faces. Don't play games with me. Don't ever, ever think you're capable of that.
You're going to have to trust us this time.
Trust you? Sure. But first of all, Dr. Song, just one thing. Who are you?
So what else is going on? Oh, also this week we have got a video from the Fine Brothers. Andy, you and I were talking about this yesterday, talking about catching up on 47 years of Doctor Who. They've done a video called 47 Years of Doctor Who in 6 minutes. And these two guys just run through the chronology of Doctor Who in terms of the Doctors from William Hartnell all the way through to Matt Smith, and give people a bit of a preview of the upcoming season and stuff like that.
At breakneck speed.
Oh, it's brilliant. It's brilliant. And I did a little bit of comparison in the article, which will be posted up this week, which is you can go down the route that the Fine Brothers have done with the video, or you can go down the route that Neil Gaiman recommends, which Tom covered from WonderCon, and where he said people can be intimidated because they think there's 47 years of stuff they need to see before they can enjoy anything. But what you want to say is, no, look, there's a blue box. It's bigger on the inside than it is on the outside. It can go anywhere in time and space, somewhere even where it's meant to go. And when it turns up, there's a bloke in it called the Doctor, and there'll be stuff wrong, and he'll do his best to sort it out. And he'll probably succeed because he's awesome. Now sit down, shut up, and watch Blink.
Yeah.
You know, here. So, yeah, and I think that does intimidate some people from watching it. The fact that it's got such a long history that there's something about continuity that scares people.
And I'll be honest with you, like when I would watch the, it had been a long time since the time I stopped watching Tom Baker Doctor Who's, and when I picked it up with Christopher Eccleston again, and I don't remember any of the things about like the Master or Gallifrey or even the backstory with the Cybermen and the Daleks, but you pick it all up again in context as you watch the show. Mm-hmm. So there's no problem there. I mean, you can pick any of this stuff up in context at all. They kind of do a little catch up when they're it's like, you know, that's part of the role of the companion, is to be the person who doesn't know what's going on so that the Doctor can explain a little bit of what's going on to them.
Yeah, yeah. I want to share a picture with you guys real quick before we wrap up the episode. This is a picture of one of the Silents. This is the creature that the Doctor is going to be facing in the first two episodes of the... now, what's your initial impressions of seeing that?
God, it's like a boogeyman, but it's like a well-dressed boogeyman.
Yeah, it's a bit spooky, actually. I think these guys...
He looks like a real alien.
Yeah, he does. He kind of has that resemblance to the Greys. Some people have made some comparisons to that design and the design of the Ood. And the presumption that people are making is that these guys are kind of like the anti-Ood. They're like the really evil...
Anti-Ood.
Yeah, kind of deal. And the interesting thing about these guys is they have this ability, this special ability, where as soon as you've seen them, they can make you forget that you've ever seen them. They erase it from your memory. And so there's this implication that's made based on that the Silents have been all around the Doctor since, season 5. And so there's been some fans that have gone through and they've done these amazing comparisons where some of them are some stretches where they've said, well, this prop wasn't in the right place where it was before in the last shot, and it's more of a production error kind of thing. But there's some interesting little things that they've picked out where some of the characters during the last season where they've done a double take and they've looked at something and they're like, whoa, what was that? Oh, never mind. I've got to move on to help the Doctor or whatever. And so that kind of fits in with what Moffat's doing. And I kind of wonder whether he did a little direction there and sort of said, right, well, let's see, when you're acting as Rory, Arthur, you're going to look over here as if you've seen something, but then you're going to do a double take and go back to what it was you were doing. And that way he can tie it back in with the whole Silence thing. It's pretty interesting. These guys look creepy.
Yeah, they really do. I'm going to have nightmares now.
Moffat's really good with monsters, I tell you.
You're someone from my future guessing that, but who? Okay. While you're in prison, who did you kill? Now I love a bad girl, me. But trust you. Seriously.
Trust me.
Okay.
So you've seen the first episode already?
I have not seen the episode. I'm just going by the spoilers and stuff. Like I told you, I'm a spoiler hound. But there are several people that have seen the first episode and the second episode. There was a big, big premiere in London a couple of weeks ago where they invited the press and fans were able to enter a contest where they can go and view it, and they did a screening of the first episode last week in New York City. So there's a few people around the place that know exactly what's going to happen, and they've kind of spilled the beans a little bit. But as far as the first episode is concerned, a lot of people have the spoiler fans have a good idea of what's going to happen, but by the time they get to episode 2, there's some murky waters there. They're not really sure what's going to pan out, how it's going to happen and everything, which I think is nice because if you get spoiled like with every single thing that's happening in the episodes, it kind of ruins it for you ruin it for yourself if you know everything.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, before we wrap, let's have a look at the season ahead of us. Well, kicking off the season, we've got the 2-part episode, The Impossible Astronaut, followed by The Day of the Moon. And the third episode is going to be an episode where the Doctor and his companions end up on a pirate ship. It's called Curse of the Black Spot. And then that will be followed by Neil Gaiman's episode, The Doctor's Wife, which looks to be really exciting. I know, Nick, Tom, you're really looking forward to that one.
Oh, yeah.
And then we've got another 2-parter, something about clones. The first part's called The Rebel Flesh, and the second part is called The Almost People. The seventh episode, which will wrap up the first part of the season, is called A Good Man Goes to War. And then its conclusion will begin on the second part of season 6, which is an untitled episode, but it's believed to have lots of Nazis in it. And then Mark Gatiss returns for episode 9. He did The Abysmal Victory of the Daleks last year, which was just horrible. But he's looking like he's going to redeem himself with an episode called What Are Little Boys Made Of? It's supposed to be very, very creepy. And then episode 10 is allegedly titled The Green Anchor. And then part 11 is the God Complex, and then we kick into episode 12, which has the working title of The Lodger Part 2, sees the return of James Corden playing Craig Owens, and then, of course, the season finale with episode 13. And so that's what we're looking forward to. Big year for Doctor Who, guys.
Huge year.
You have to do this, and you can't ask why.
Are you being threatened? Is someone making you say that?
No.
You're lying.
I'm not lying.
Swear to me. Swear to me on something that matters.
Fish fingers and custard.
Anything you guys want to add in closing?
I wish it was next Saturday.
No shit, dude. Me too.
I just cannot wait. What does one do when one doesn't have BBC America?
They should fix that pretty soon. They're going to start offering them online.
Okay, there we go.
I believe that's true, actually. There has been a lot of talk about the BBC America starting to use the same iPlayer streaming video that BBC UK use. Because as soon as the episodes air in the the UK, they're available online for fans at the BBC site.
If that were the case, I would look forward to seeing the rest of the BBC lineup, because there's a lot of great shows over there that we just don't get over here, and the only way to get them is through ways that are less condoned than other ways.
I don't know what you're talking about, Andy.
You know what though? Neil Gaiman actually spoke about that in the interview that Tom did with him, where he was like, you know, the fact of the matter is, you know, how popular Doctor Who has become in the United States has really been a fan driven thing more than it has been driven by the BBC. You know, it's the fans that have been pushing it and sharing it online through torrents and spreading the word that's really pushed it to the point that it is now. And I think, you know, the BBC are recognizing that, at least over in the UK, by providing the episodes to UK fans after they've aired on their iPlayer streaming video and stuff.
And let's not forget that they're planning a global launch of their iPlayer content on the iPad and a couple other streaming devices very soon. So that could launch into something much more grand in the future.
Cannot wait.
Absolutely. Well, next week is the big week for everyone. This week is Week of Geek, Countdown to Doctor Who. So while you're listening to this TARDIS blend, go and have a look in the sidebar at geeksofdoom.com over there on the right-hand side of your screen, and you'll see that there's other articles about Doctor Who there. There's also some previous episodes of the TARDIS blend. And if you keep checking geeksofdoom.com every day, there's going to be little bits and pieces about Doctor Who posted all this week in celebration of the new series as we get ready for the premiere of The Impossible Astronaut. You will be able to catch Tom and myself next week with us doing our review of The Impossible Astronaut right here at geeksofdoom.com. So, dude, it's been a whole year.
Yeah,
a year of TARDIS blend. Isn't that awesome?
Congratulations.
It is awesome, man.
All right. Well, we'll catch you next time. Andy, thank you so much for joining us for this
pleasure.
Edition of
TARDIS blend.
And for those of you who are a little bit tech inclined, if you feel like listening to another podcast after you finish listening to this, go and head over to the drilldown.com, because right after we finish recording this, we're going to record that show. So you can check that out over there at thedrilldown.com. And, you know, you can also catch my other podcast that I'm co-hosting called Social Blend. We're back this week with a new episode, and you can catch that at social-blend.com. But for the time being, all your Doctor Who stuff right here at geeksofdoom.com and TARDIS Blend. We'll catch you next time. Dilly gaff. Tom's saying, my penis, it's mine.
It's not even the first show we've started with that happened.
This is true. Tom loves his penis.
always been.
Apparently, it's bigger on the inside than what it is on the outside.
Hey now.